since Rhode Island. Welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners and let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Welcome, everybody. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I cannot believe just the sheer ineptitude of the Ministry of Magic.
Oh, hello. Welcome to government.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Have you lived in America the past several years?
You know, the author.
Have you seen the world during a pandemic? I mean, welcome to government.
The author is very prescient, very, very prescient with this, how this event goes down.
Yeah.
And how that relates to what happened here in America, January 6th with the but with the Capitol riots and all those things. Like the mob mentality of it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and even like how things were going prior to the election, right? Like, things were crazy.
Listen, you know, I mean, you even think back just like when the Red Sox won the World Series and everyone with the adrenaline and how many riots happen after sports games. I mean, that's really, you feed off of that and then you add in racial differences, religious differences, muggle-born versus wizard-born differences. I mean, she really does. The author pulls from a lot of things that happen in real life to...
Sure. I mean, there's the obvious comparisons here. Like, you want to talk about, like, Nazi Germany and all those and all of that. Like, yes, absolutely.
Well, I wasn't going there. I was just going Red Sox, Yankees.
You could.
But okay, you went there.
But you could.
Yes,
and Red
yes.
Sox, Yankee stuff. And like,
no, but...
We lived through that. It was a big deal. And here... We'll get into it.
Before we do, though, of course, we want to remind you that we are here in Chapter 9, The Dark Mark. "Hello?" called Harry. There was silence. Harry got to his feet and peered around the tree. It was too dark to see very far, but he could sense somebody standing just beyond the range of his vision. "Who's there?" he said. And then, without warning, the silence was rent by a voice unlike any they had heard in the wood, and it uttered, not a panicked shout, but what sounded more like a spell. "Mors Morder!" And something vast, green, and glittering erupted from the patch of darkness Harry's eyes had been struggling to penetrate. It flew up over the treetops and into the sky. "What the?" gasped Ron as he sprang to his feet again, staring up at the thing that had appeared. For a split second, Harry thought it was another leprechaun formation. Then he realized it was a colossal skull, comprised of what looked like emerald stars, with a serpent protruding from its mouth like a tongue. And as they watched, it rose higher and higher, blazing in a haze of greenish smoke, etched against the black sky like a new constellation.
The author really has a gift. Really, really has a gift. And I think this chapter is kind of all over the place in many different ways, and I think we'll get into it.
Okay.
But truly has a gift for writing these experiences, mm-hmm, in ways that are very, very tactile. You can sense them and feel them. You can even hear it like in your brain. You can really...
You're there.
...experience... In addition to the Dark Mark coming about, but also like the experience of the Roberts and the Roberts family and big time stuff.
Mm.
But we'll get into that.
Well, before we do, I wanted to remind you all listening to this, if you're listening to this currently, we actually air these podcast episodes as video live premieres every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mary and Blake Facebook page. So if you're not following us on Facebook, and if you belong on Facebook, check us out there. We're also live at the same time on our YouTube page. Just search Mary and Blake. And lastly, we do have an awesome Facebook community. Just search Mary and Blake, request to join our group. We share loads of Harry Potter fun facts, memes, other things about the other podcasts that we cover, and we would just love for you to be a part of that exclusive community. All right, let's get into the show.
"I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good."
Ha- Harry daydreams about what it would have been like if he himself was a professional Quidditch player. Fun fact, he probably could have been, because Ginny Weasley, who becomes a professional Quidditch player, says that he was a better flyer than him.
Oh.
Fun fact. Fun fact.
Look at you.
Wizards get crazy. I mean, it is seriously circa, what was that, 2004, 2002, Red Sox, Yankees? I don't even know, but craziness, man. We've been there. We lived it. Burnt cars. What?
I'm going to slightly disagree with you on this one.
It's worse.
It's way worse.
It's way worse, guys. It's way worse, but I'm just saying.
If this was all good fun.
It didn't feel like good fun to me, man.
It was not.
There were cars on fire. There are people going bananas.
That's different. That is different.
This is the difference of a public college and a private college. You guys probably all were just doing like cheers and laughing had cars on fire.
But we were at our football stadium, right. Like the practice football. We brought down the goalposts and the Manchester police and Goffstown police and Derry police. They all had to come in like the heavy gear. They had the cars. We were all surrounded.
You guys are essentially muggles, though. You're like, look at us. We're so cool. People were straight up like, let's flip over cars and torch.
Oh, yeah. No, UMass yeah. Amherst See, had was
public
like
public college, private college. Watch out.
But the city of Boston, too, was a little bananas. Actually, a poor girl got killed with a rubber bullet.
Oh, my gosh. See, I'm just telling you.
But it wasn't like this.
No, it wasn't. It was not Levy Corpus or Wingardium Leviosa. We have to figure out what spell they used. But nonetheless, it was not like that. Because once again, the wizards went crazy. Death Eaters abound. Took over and were just pulling pranks on muggles. Harry, Ron, Hermione get split up from the crowd trying to find safety. Draco Malfoy just busts them a little bit.
I would say worse than that.
Okay.
Too.
Okay. Sorry. Like I'm just trying to do a quick synopsis.
You're 100% right. The
Dark Market shown. Harry's wand was used to do it, and the kids almost get stunned, and there's just crazy things going on. Poor Winky the house elf gets the blame, and this chapter is B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Where is Gwen Stefani? Because that is like the sound clip for this chapter. I think that this analysis is going to take a little while. So, friends, hold on to your butts as, my favorite quote from Jurassic Park.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Hold on to your butts, because this is going to be a doozy. So that is the quick synopsis, Blake.
Okay, great. Excellent job. No, honestly, that's a good job. Where do you want to begin with this, Mary?
Let's start at the very beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
It truly is. Okay, so Fred and George, let's just start with the merriment of the fact that they suddenly have loads of gold and they are pumped about this. They're not going to tell their dad what they're spending it on. And wisely, Arthur Weasley says, you know, I don't even want to ask. I just don't even want to ask.
Just don't tell your mother.
Yeah. Let's just keep this between you because we are all set with this. But
that is something
sure.
I would totally do.
Yeah.
Just don't tell your mother.
And of course, you know, there's all this ruckusness happening from the wind and everyone thinks, oh, Ireland's just celebrating too much. Arthur Weasley even jokes. He's like, glad I'm not on duty.
Yeah.
Glad this isn't my job to make them be quiet.
We don't
got
to say nothing to them.
Right? I am a lucky fella. And it actually becomes something worse. So he wakes everybody up and he's shaking everybody and he's like, we got to go outside. This isn't just celebration. There is something really bad going. And it ends up being these hooded wizards, which we end up finding out later, are Death Eaters. So this is the first mention of the Death Eaters.
Correct.
We get to, you know, the first viewing of them. So they are these scary hooded wizards. You know, the images, of course, evoke like the KKK. Mm. So, you know, just walking around, of course, you know, hiding their identities, being able to pull this plank where they have this entire Muggle family, four people, kids, woman whose knickers are now showing, floating up in the air. And, you know, when they're describing this and they're describing what's happening with the Muggle family, you know, she's aware, the wife is aware that her undies are now showing. Mm. So it's not like they're asleep and they're floating in the air. They are being tormented. They've never seen this before. They're Muggles. They've never seen magic. They don't know what's going on. And additionally, the Death Eaters just keep pew, 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 like lighting tents on fire. Mm-hmm. So they're messing with the Muggles. They're messing with the wizards. And it is absolutely bananas. So the younger Weasleys and Harry and Hermione, Fred, George, and below, they all need to run to safety. Whereas super smoking hot Bill and Charlie
just running right towards
an average Percy. and Arthur Weasley, all the like of age, you know, wizards.
Super hot Bill and Charlie. And
let's be real.
Average Percy.
Percy, you know? Every family's got a Percy. Every family. They go out and they're like, we got this. And I sat there reading this, and it's a minuscule bit in the chapter, but I cheers to those Gryffindors because Percy gets a lot of hate.
Yeah.
And yet there he goes running off to battle. He doesn't say, ooh, I need to go like make sure my cauldron papers are okay. You right. know, they go off to protect.
This reminds me, especially as you talk about super hot Bill and Charlie running into the fray. Mm-hmm. This actually quite reminds me of Batman versus Superman. If you recall, Ben Affleck running at the beginning of Batman versus Superman, the buildings are coming down and Ben Affleck is racing into Metropolis to try to like find out what is happening to one of his buildings. And as he runs, he sees Superman and Zod fighting, and one of his buildings comes crashing down. Mm-hmm. And there's smoke everywhere, of course, which evokes 9/11. But as everybody is running away from the building, Bruce Wayne, Ben Affleck, is running towards the building and into the smoke and without abandon.
Gryffindor, yeah.
Yeah, is just zero abandon, mm-hmm. runs into the smoke and just puts his arms up. And that's actually one of my most favorite moments from any superhero film ever. It's because it's so indicative of what Batman is about, mm-hmm. and what Bruce Wayne is about. But Bill and Charlie just doing this same thing, and Mr. Weasley just running into this fray with no abandon, mm-hmm. and saying, "Okay, we're going in. I don't care what happens. We're gonna solve, and we're gonna fight with the Ministry and see what happens here."
Yeah,
I love moments like that because it just explains character so well. And go back, if you go back and watch Batman vs. Superman, that movie does have a lot of its problems. I will totally agree. But that opening bit of Batman vs. Superman is excellent.
I love it.
Yep.
So, you know, we've got the younger Weasleys and Fred George take off with Ginny, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione kind of get taken off from the crowd. They lose Ron temporarily, bless his heart, and Hermione does Lumos. And I like to point this out. I mean, it's nothing big at all.
This is stupid.
But it's another example of underage wizardry. Hermione uses Lumos to find Ron, and yet she doesn't get like a letter from the Ministry. She doesn't get in trouble. She doesn't possibly get expelled. Whereas, you know, Harry doing a little bit of accidental wizardry even right. got him in trouble. And so once again, I'm thinking it is by your house. So here we are at the Quidditch World Cup, where they probably just were like, there's going to be magic happening abound. You know, we're not going to worry about it. So even though Hermione casts a spell, I'm wondering if she did that spell at home, in front of a muggle, things like that, she would have gotten in trouble.
Yeah, is the wizarding rule based on like the kind of charm or spell? Is it
if it's viewed by a muggle?
Yes. Is it viewed by a muggle? Is it something?
I'm thinking. I'm wondering if it
is it also like indicative of the kind of spell? Like, so Harry in the third movie, I know this isn't necessarily. Oh, it is canon to the book. He's doing the Lumos right in the book at the beginning.
I don't think so.
Isn't he doing Lumos?
Now we're
going
to go back. This is where the book and the movies meld your mind.
I'm pretty sure that he's doing. I'm about 98% sure he's doing Lumos.
I know
the
he
book.
Had to like hide his spell books and he had to hide everything. But
well,
yeah, we can go back.
But whatever. Let's just say for the sake of argument, like Harry in the movie. Okay, in the movie is doing Lumos. Hermione here is doing Lumos. Right? Is that something? Can the wizarding barometer tell the difference between actively doing a serious spell like Avada Kedavra between that or Lumos, like to light something?
I'm wondering though if it's done in front of a muggle. Like if Harry was doing Lumos in front of Dudley's friends,
sure.
if that would have been an issue versus just practicing it under a bed.
I think we're talking the same thing.
Yeah.
Like is the rule is
it's still a gray area, is what
self,
we're gonna get at.
Is it self-identifying? That's the question.
Okay.
Is it identifying of itself in the severity of the spell, and Can the barometer be self-aware? I guess that's the question.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, as we finally found Ron, He tripped over a tree root. And this is where we stumble, ba-dum-bum-ting, onto Draco Malfoy, who is just ever so casually leaning against a tree. There is absolute mayhem going on right now. Yeah. And Draco's sitting there like he's just chilling at a park making a gimp necklace, you know? Like, what are we doing here? And he makes what I think is one of the worst attempts at trying to belittle Ron Weasley. Now, our younger folks may not get it totally okay, but he says, oh, with feet that big, no wonder you've tripped over the root. Which older people might sit there and say, hey, having a big feet isn't such a bad thing, supposedly. So, well done, Ron. High five. Yeah. But of course, the kids here, they're 14, words, and it's totally okay.
In other words, he's packing.
Yes, yes. I just laugh because I'm like, oh, Draco, like, here you are trying to, like, insult somebody, and it's like saying, like, well, it's just because you're so good looking that that happened, you know, whatever. But I do think that it's quite interesting to note that Draco is standing alone nearby, leaning against a tree, looking utterly relaxed. And this is where he says, you know, you don't want her spot. And he nods, of course, to Hermione. And everyone says, what is it supposed to mean? And he said, they're after Muggles. And, you know, would you want to be mid-air? And Harry jumps in. Hermione's a witch. Have it your own way, Potter. If you think they can't spot a mudblood, stay where you are. So once again, using this term mudblood, which we've learned in the previous book is the, you know, equivalent of essentially a swear, you know, calling her a very derogatory word. And yet, it's not like, no, they can't spot a mudblood. You know what I mean? Like, mudbloods look just like every other wizard. It would have to be that she would be called out by someone like Draco Malfoy.
Yeah, this is where I think this book, this chapter starts taking a very serious turn.
Yeah.
A very serious turn, and not in funny, like, you know, serious, you know, black ways, but like very serious turn. To how scary this situation mm-hmm. is. And I want to go back to the parts where they're talking about the Roberts and how how this whole situation starts. I mean, it's, oh man, not great. Not great, Bob. Where is it?
By the light of the, I think it would be Levy Corpus, by the way, if I had to put my money on a spell.
By the light of the few fires that were still burning, he could see people running away into the woods, fleeing something that was moving across the field towards them, something that was emitting odd flashes of light and noises like gunfire. Loud jeering, roars of laughter, and drunken yells were drifting towards them. Then came a burst of strong green light, which illuminated the scenes. First, this is scary. Because people are laughing, and this term here, drunken yells, like this is like purposeful. This is like people are drunk and they're just doing whatever they want to do. And we'll get more to this. A crowd of wizards, tightly packed and moving together with wands pointing straight upwards, was marching slowly across the field. Harry squinted at them. They didn't seem to have faces. Then he realized that their heads were hooded and their faces masked. High, struggling figures were being contorted into grotesque shapes. It was as though the masked wizards on the ground were puppeteers, and the people above them were marionettes operated by invisible strings that rose from the wands into the air. Two of the figures were very small. More wizards were joining and then marching the group and laughing and pointing up at the floating bodies. Tents crumpled and fell as the marching crowd swelled. Once or twice, Harry saw one of the marchers blast a tent out of his way with his wand. Several caught fire. The screaming grew louder. The floating people were suddenly illuminated as they passed over a burning tent, and Harry recognized one of them, Mr. Roberts, the campsite manager. The other three looked as though they might have been his wife and children. One of the marchers below flipped Mrs. Roberts upside down with his wand. Her nightdress fell down to reveal voluminous drawers. She struggled to cover herself up as the crowd below her screeched and hooted with glee. That's sick, Ron muttered, watching the smallest muggle child who had begun to spin like a top 60 feet above the ground, his head flopping limply from side to side. That is really sick. This is problematic for me. Not in a sense that I don't like it or that it's not well written or that it doesn't serve the story well, but it just shows you the mob crowd mentality. People are joining. This is not just Death Eaters who are doing this. My sense in the way that it feels is that the Death Eaters are the ones that are controlling the Roberts family. But it's the crowd of people who are just joining in for the sake of entertainment, for the sake of joining. And that is problematic for me. That is,
again, it is weird reading it post happened at the Capitol riots. It's really, you know,
or
here
like
we are.
Charlottesville or like that whole area, like it is scary.
Reading it now here 2021, you know, at live time of us recording it, it's mob mentality is real.
And not only is the mob mentality real here, it is just regular wizards who are joining in and exposing this woman, this woman, her voluminous drawers. You know, it sounds funny, but it's not. And the way that this is written, I think as a kid, you could get a sense of what is happening here. But as an adult, this is intense stuff, especially when it's talking about the muggle child who had begun to spin like a top 60 feet above the ground, his head flopping limply from side to side. That
like,
is
like we could just picture one of our kids.
Yeah, right.
60 feet above the ground, flopping head. You know, exactly. You read this, you know, I read it when it came out. And, you know, you're reading it so quickly because it's fast paced and it's scary and exciting and all at the same time. But yeah, reading it now as a parent and just picturing you being up there, but with your children, 60 feet is no joke.
Yeah, that's a good.
That is high.
That is high.
That is so high.
And there is no repercussions for this. There's no security. There's no anything. People are just joining in because they're joining in, and maybe some of the people don't even recognize what's happening because maybe it is so high, and they're just laughing and joining in on the festivities. And that is why I say what happened with the Yankees and the Red Sox back in 04 or whatever, and when the Red Sox won the World Series, that is different because you know what? Yeah, there's a burning car and there's a burning couch and, you know, people are climbing the street lamps and, you know, doing stupid things.
But it's a different type of mob mentality when you're actively hurting people.
You are this group, whether they are Death Eaters or not, these are just regular wizards hurting somebody intentionally.
Hurting a family, including kids.
Right. And not only is it a family, it's a muggle family, and it's very specific that it's a muggle family. This goes to show you that there is, I think, even though it's centered around the Death Eaters, it's not just Death Eaters who believe in the superiority that wizards have over muggles.
That there are people who are kind of in that gray area who lean.
Yes. And that brings me, I think, back, well, or brings me forward to the stuff with Draco.
I mean, and you just looking forward. You look forward at Umbridge, who, you know, is a ministry official. Who, you know, you're not looking at her like a Death Eater who hides under a cloak and a mask, you know, but this is another person who is hired by the government, who has her own biases against magical beings and even against muggleborns. Like, there are people among them who may feel similar ways. The other thing that I do have issue with, which I know has to be a major plot point, and it is important to note that the author rewrote this particular chapter almost 13 times.
Wow.
She has been quoted saying multiple times that this chapter nearly broke her. That there were like major plot points that get laid in this chapter that if done incorrectly could have either just made everything so blatant to the reader or could have just like ruined everything. That this chapter stumped her in a way that she was never stumped this series.
I did not know that.
No.
And I can see why, because there's a lot happening here. It's setting everything up.
Well, and it's funny for you to say that, like, because it's kind of setting things up as a non-book reader of this particular book, which I gotta say, man, I love you so much, but this is the struggle bus for me right now. We've gone through the previous three books, you know, being able to say like, oh yeah, this is because this happenings and this is because this is gonna happen, and from five on we're gonna be fine, but the movie 4 and the book 4 are so different in the sense of the book. So when Blake was introduced to the Harry Potter series, we were dating, and the fifth movie was coming out, the last book was coming out that year. Told him, I was like, listen, I know you've never been into the Harry Potter series before, but we have to catch you up, and we have to catch you up quick. So even though I love the fourth book, the important aspects that carry you on into the series are generally covered in the movie.
Yes.
So the fourth book is like the most amazing thing within itself. Yet when you're looking at books 5, 6, 7, you don't necessarily need everything that is covered in here.
The film is more efficient.
In whole series.
Yeah, yes. Like what I'll tell you, yes. So far in reading the first 9 chapters,
it's
right?
It's so difficult.
The film is much more efficient, I think, at telling
the series story
as opposed to the book story.
What I told Blake was, all you need to know in book 4 is that Voldemort kills a kid and he comes back to life. Like, that's what you need to know, is that, like, it goes from being, yay, I'm eating Bertie Bott's every flavored beans.
Wee, Quidditch!
To Voldemort physically comes back.
Right.
And that is the tough thing when it comes to book 4, because it is so different than movie 4. There's literally going to be, Blake, several plots within this book that you're going to be like, this is deliciously fun. Like, this is many people's favorite book, not favorite movie, favorite book, because of these deliciously woven plot points that don't necessarily need to be important for the books going forward.
This chapter, though,
I'm telling you,
is a big deal.
Is a big deal, and it's difficult for me to talk with you about them because I want to be like, here you go. Here you go.
Right.
Here you go. Well, so we'll just put pins in things, even though
you
we hate that.
I was going to say, let's stick a wand in that.
Oh, I mean, that's like a really big thing.
What do you mean?
I don't really want to stick a wand in anything.
That's what she said.
Okay, Blake, this is a family-friendly show.
So, but let's, I want to, let's table that one, that conversation for a minute.
Okay.
Because that I do want to get into that, because this is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
But I want to talk about, because I want to bring it back, the conversation about how these wizards are taking part
the Death Eaters,
everybody is taking part in this kind of riotous act, and how that is scary and almost a hellscape. It feels like, with the burning and the fires and the people and the green light illuminate, it just feels very scary. But then it goes back to Draco, and you are right, Mary, when you say Draco's just hanging out and just sitting there. It's almost like he's just waiting, because he knows what's going on, and he's just waiting for it to go through and end so that he can get back with his mom and dad and say, see you later.
Yeah.
Like, he knows the plan. He knows what was going to happen the entire time.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Okay.
But
fair statement.
I like the fact that Malfoy shows up here, because Draco Malfoy was standing alone nearby them, leaning against a tree. By the way, this is evocative of Tom Riddle leaning against the pillar in the Chamber of Secrets. Remember how he's just leaning up against
Is it the Slytherin lean?
It's the Slytherin lean.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
I'm going to watch this in movies going forward. See how often Slytherin's just leaning against something.
It's kind of like when bad guys wear leather coats.
Oh my gosh. For any Virgin River fans, Brady is no longer wearing a leather black coat. He switched to corduroy black coats, which means he's like just fringe bad. When people wear black leather in a show, it means they're a bad guy.
That's 100% true. It is anytime someone wears, we noticed it in Battlestar Galactica, I think.
Brady even has a black leather couch. Battlestar Galactica, we definitely noticed.
I think that's when we first noticed.
They all came in. I'm like, where'd they find all these black leather coats in Armageddon? Like, where? What flea market sells black leather coats on spaceships?
Oh, man, that was so funny. I don't have my So Say We All thing
anymore.
Totally
okay, Blake. Oh. Let's move on. We're still in Draco Malfoy leaning against the tree.
Yeah, here it is.
The Slytherin lean.
It is evocative of Tom Riddle. I just want to say that.
Okay. Noted.
looking utterly relaxed, his arms folded, he seemed to have been watching the scene on the campsite through a gap in the trees. Ron told Malfoy to do something that Harry knew he would never have dared say in front of Mrs. Weasley. Language, Weasley! That also is evocative of the Avengers. Just throw that out there. Said Malfoy, his pale eyes glittering. Hadn't you better be hurrying along now? You wouldn't like her spotted, would you? He nodded at Hermione, and at the same moment, a blast like a bomb sounded from the campsite, and a flash of green light momentarily lit the trees around them. "What's that supposed to mean?" said Hermione defiantly. "Granger, they're after muggles," said Malfoy. "Do you want to be showing off your knickers in midair? Because if you do, hang around. They're moving this way."
Get it? And, hang around?
And it would give us...
Oh, because they're hanging in the air.
And it would give us all a laugh. "Hermione's a witch," Harry snarled. "Have it your own way, Potter," said Malfoy, grinning maliciously. "If you think they can't spot a mudblood, stay where you are." "You watch your mouth," shouted Ron. Everybody present knew that mudblood was a very offensive term for which a witch or wizard would have muggle parentage. "Never mind, Ron," said Hermione quickly, seizing Ron's arm to restrain him as he took a step towards Malfoy. There came a big bang from the other side of the trees that was louder than anything they had ever heard, and several people nearby screamed. Malfoy chuckled softly. "Scare easily, don't they?" he said lazily. "I suppose your daddy told you all to hide. What's he up to, trying to rescue the muggles?" "Where's your parents?" said Harry, his temper rising. "Out there wearing masks, are they?" I read all that because, obviously, Malfoy, I think, is fully aware of what's happening and knowing that his parents are probably involved. But there's also a turning point for Malfoy here, and I wanted your opinion on this, Mary. He's threatening Hermione in a way that is happening to Mrs. Roberts.
Yes.
And that, I think, is...
It's taking it to the next level.
It's taking it to the next level because it's more... It's not just...
Mudblood.
Mudblood is a hard name as it is.
But it's not just name calling.
It's not just schoolboy, teenager, like little pricks... pranks and tricks. I put those two words together. Whoops. It's not just these little pranks anymore, and it is not like this schoolhouse type thing. This is Draco taking it to the next level of almost a sexualized nature, I think. I mean, we're talking about seeing someone's underwear and...
Let's just say private areas. I mean, because
yeah, I mean,
this is
a very physical threat.
There we go.
And if I say physical, you adults know what I mean by physical, and it is very intense. This kind of threat. This feels much more
very vulnerable, very more raw, very scary on very different levels. Exactly. I agree. It's not like they put Mr. Roberts in the air and then pulled down his drawers. You know, this is Mrs. Roberts with her knickers showing. So I hear you. Let's shift a little bit. I appreciate where you're going, but like.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine.
Let's switch.
Let's ask this question now, though, Mary. Is there too much happening in this chapter?
No.
Why do you say that?
Why would you say that there is too much?
Because we're talking...
You're supposed to be... I'll tell you this, Blake. You know what? I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm going to spoil some things for you. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Sorry, not sorry. You need to be frenetic, and you need to be a chaotic reader in this chapter, because literally, she lays everything out. Right here.
I get it. I guess my problem with this chapter is tone, because we're going from scary, like wizards torturing muggles, kids' heads flopping around, yep, knickers and voluminous underwear and fire and but then we're talking about like Winky and the protection of
no.
Oh, hold on. Wait. Let me just finish. We're talking about Winky and like there doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency when the kids are in the woods. They're just like hanging out and they have enough time. Hermione has enough time to talk about house elves and why it's people like you, Ron. And hold on. And then also, in addition to that, Harry's playing with this Victor Crumb, statue and they're having all these different conversations, and it's just like, what are we doing?
We are witnessing everything. You haven't read this book, so you don't know.
I guess my issue is, like, I know what this is doing. It's setting up Spew, and it's setting
No!
It's not.
Barty Crouch Jr. is hidden, and Winky is covering for him.
No, I know that.
No, you don't know that.
I can assume that because I know you can start putting all these pieces together. You can see that Winky is obviously hiding something. She doesn't want to give anything up because she can't. She has the wand because Barty Crouch Jr. gave her the wand. She was knocked out because he knocked her out. I get all that.
Just have patience. Stop complaining and let's move past this page.
You're
boring me.
I'm not boring. I'm just saying.
You are boring me. I've been here for a half hour already and I want to turn the page.
All right, fair enough. Fine. I'm just saying the tone of this goes from scary to like where...
No, I go.
Hermione is talking about.
I completely disagree.
And
with
then,
you.
And then it gets into the dark mark, and there's a lot happening here.
Can you stop talking for a while?
Yes,
because I'm like so.
Fine. No problem. Go ahead.
Just hang, man.
Continue on,
stop
my love.
Stop complaining.
Continue on. I apologize. I'm just bringing up my own little concerns.
Your concern is that you're supposed to feel chaotic and confused.
Here's what I'll say. I think the film does a better job conveying what happens in this scene.
That is a fair statement.
Than the book does.
For a person who prefers film over reading.
No, because
you
my sense of the film
I'm
was that...
I'm putting my hair up for this. We're like freaking fighting right now.
My sense...
You're like, ugh, movie's better than...
No. I'm not saying
it's
better.
Goblet of Fire. It's not.
I'm not saying the movie's better than the book. I'm saying...
Fanning myself.
The scene... Of this scene in the film does a better job conveying the chaos.
I need friends to weigh in on this.
Than the book does. Because the book seems like the chapter starts off really well, and then it comes to a screeching halt.
Okay, I'm just going to take over. So,
and
here we go.
And then it continues again.
So here we are. We can just like just give a moment that Arthur Weasley made a little poor planning and not having an adult or an older person watch over the little kids. We'll get over that. Maybe a different perspective. We bump into some French girls who are asking, where is Madame? To Maxine, putting a little drop. The Beauxbatons girls. Hermione knows who this is. It's important for us to have this because Madame Maxine is going to be one of the people who are possible suspects for putting Harry's name into the Goblet of Fire.
Sure.
So here we are in this moment of chaos and we're just dripped this name, Madame Maxine. We want to associate confusion, how do we feel about this with Madame Maxine.
Yep.
And then we have Harry noticing he has lost his wand.
Yeah, not great, Bob.
Big deal.
Not great.
Big problem.
Not great, Bob.
Big problem. And it's not like he has an Apple Watch that can ping it. You know what I mean? It's not an iPhone Apple Watch situation. They're trying to figure out where it is, and it's a massive mess. And then all of a sudden, we see Winky. We see Winky, the house elf.
Right.
Trying desperately to get out of the bushes. And of course, Ron and Hermione, everybody's met Winky. They got to see the first house elf a little while ago, and she's having this issue. There is bad wizards about. She squeaked, distracted. I can't even do it because you threw me off so much hating on this chapter.
I'm not hating on it.
You are.
I'm not hating on it. I'm just
people high in the air, and Winky is getting out of the way. She runs into the trees. She's squeaking, and of course, Ron knows what's going on. And there are. Tell me from your perspective.
What do you mean?
What's going on?
Well, she's trying to get away and she can't. And Hermione is then commenting on why she can't escape. Mm-hmm. And because I know the story from the film overall, you can start piecing things together. Why is she there? How does she have the wand? Why was she knocked out? And we've already gone through it. So... that's my take from what's happening here.
Okay. So book readers know what's happening is Barty Crouch is messing with her. Barty Crouch Jr. is messing
right.
with her.
And her loyalty is now, it's split because she's loyal to Barty Crouch Jr.
It's the whole Dobby problem, right? Like, I'm loyal to the family that I work for literally just because I'm bound to them and I work for them, but I know that this is wrong. So I'm fighting against this magical bond that I have to obey a family even though I know what is happening is wrong. Harry and Hermione are able to say, like, you know, it's a kind of a bewitched kind of thing. They're kind of trying to figure out what it is, but they're in a basic sense. They're thinking just like Winky isn't allowed to run away, just like she had to stay in a very high place. Maybe she's afraid she's going to be put up high. She has this fear of height. So maybe mm-hmm. she's afraid she's going to be dangling like the muggles up above. But really, it is Barty Crouch Jr. messing with her at that point.
This is when... hold on one second. Sorry. Yeah, this is when they're talking about the broomstick that'll reach Jupiter, and Bagman shows
the Vilas.
Up. The Vilas and the Stan Shunpike is there talking to the Vilas. Like,
okay, we bump into all of these. We bump into goblins.
Can you just admit that there's...
It's chaos, Blake. You need to feel chaos because the author is writing everything. She had to do this so many times because if she made it very in your face that, like, watch out, Winky's acting super weird. Winky's acting weird and Barty Crouch Sr.'s gonna act really weird in a hot second. If it was just that and it was written poorly, then you would know what's going on.
Yeah.
Then you're gonna know the bad guys, like, right away, and you're gonna have it in your face. So they have to add in. Then there's goblins, which are counting a bunch of money. Then here are the Vila, and we get to see all these guys. And ooh, here's Stan Shunpike. Like, we see Stan Shunpike pop up a few times within this series. So just like familiar faces, we need to sprinkle in all of these people and all of this chaos to confuse us as the reader.
I guess I don't see any urgency. That's the thing. I don't see any, like, my sense is when I'm reading this, the stuff is happening at the camp. There's no urgency outside in the woods. People are just hanging out in the woods waiting for, like, everything to end. Mm-hmm. And then we get finally the Dark Mark, which
I don't
scares
see people just
everybody.
Hanging. I see it as people leaving, and then there are things distracting, or there are people who don't necessarily understand what's going on. We got Ludo Bagman, of course, who comes out of the woods. He has no idea what's going on. He's crabby.
Right.
He's crabby.
But he has no idea what's happening.
None.
Right.
So, you know, we need to keep that in perspective that this is late at night. We've got the Vila who have completely intoxicated, you know, guys while they've been walking around. We've got these goblins counting their money. We've got Ludo being super crabby, you know, just doing his thing. So I think it is the chaos. I think the kids keep trying to make their way away from the fire, away from the muggles, away from the Death Eaters.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's too kind of watered down. The possible suspects in the reader's mind.
Sure. There is a lot of people, I will, and there's a lot of exposure for these characters. I will get that. I will give that over. But then we get the Dark Mark actually being conjured, Mos Mordra, and...
Interesting thing. Mos Mordra is a green spell, and the only other green spell I think that I know of is Avada Kedavra.
Yeah, right.
So this was often put up into the air, you know, it was often the spell that they would do when to signify that they have killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's an interesting thing that it was
a
green glittering spell.
Very nice.
When normally we think of green with Avada Kedavra.
Yep, absolutely. And then we have obviously the, you know, all the wizards coming about.
You're going to keep vamping. I have to go help the kids. So Blake is going to solo podcast for a hot second.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness gracious. I am a little overwhelmed at this idea. Oh no. I'm going to have to do this all by myself. All right. So here's the deal. Mos Mordra is cast, and I like how this is written. Who's there? Oh, actually, Mary already read all this, so I don't need to read it here. Suddenly, the wood all around them erupted with screams. Harry didn't understand why, but the only possible cause was the sudden appearance of the skull, which had now risen high enough to illuminate the entire wood like some grisly neon sign. He scanned the darkness for the person who had conjured the skull, but he couldn't see anyone. "Who's there?" he called again. "Harry, come on, move!" Hermione had seized the back of his jacket and was tugging him backwards. "What's the matter?" Harry said, startled to see her face so white and terrified. "It's the Dark Mark, Harry," Hermione moaned, pulling him as hard as she could. "You know whose sign?" "Voldemort's? Harry, come on!" Harry turned. Ron was hurriedly scooping up his miniature crumb. With the three of them had started across the clearing, but before they had taken more than a few hundred hurried steps, a series of popping noises announced the arrival of 20 wizards appearing from thin air surrounding them. Harry whirled around, and in a split second, he registered one fact. Each of these wizards had his wand out, and every wand was pointing right at himself, Ron, and Hermione. Without pausing to think, he yelled, "Duck!" And he seized the other two and pulled them down into the ground. "Stupefy!" roared 20 voices. There was a blinding series of flashes, and Harry felt the hair in his head ripple as though through a powerful wind had swept the clearing. Raising his head a fraction from an inch, he saw jets of fiery red lights flying over them from wizards' wands, crossing each other, bouncing off tree trunks, rebounding into the darkness. "Stop!" yelled a voice he recognized. "Stop! That's my son!"
"Ugh. Here, I need you to go upstairs and take care of the kids because they want to watch this, and I can't make it work."
Sure,
I will. I'm taking over. This, my friends, the
reason why I'm reading this, Mary, is because I wanted to talk about how Ron and Harry did not know what this mark was, but Hermione did.
Yes.
And that goes to show you how shielded this young generation of wizards really is.
Ooh.
Go, vamp.
Ooh, I love it. So first and foremost, I mean, here we are, Harry Potter, who did not know anything about the wizarding world and is literally learning things as he goes. Unlike Hermione, who takes all of her free time to read about the history and all the things. And by the way, friends, for your listening or if you're watching, thank you for your patience as we're trying to take care of our kids. You know, I said it before and I'll say it again. We are a mom and pop podcast company, and we've got two little ones, a 6 and 8 year old. So occasionally we have to take a moment to kind of like finagle and take care of them. And they are wanting to watch a movie right now, and I was not able to get it up and working for them. So I truly appreciate your patience. I know that, you know, traditionally podcast episodes are quite seamless, and yet here we are dealing with situations. But those of you who are parents or those of you who have little ones in your life, you know that sometimes it just throws you a curveball. And particularly, I know several of you have had to work from home, so you get the struggles and the juggles. I think it's quite interesting because Harry, as I said, as much as he loves the fact that he's a wizard and he feels at home, I don't necessarily feel like he is the Hermione level of, "I want to learn everything there is to learn about the wizarding world." You know, I think he lives a lot in the present. I think that he is a bit of a dreamer in the sense, you know, here he is dreaming about possibly being a professional Quidditch player. He's still trying to digest everything about his parents. He's got his own issues going on. He's got his own issues. I mean, think about the dream that he had with Voldemort. So it's a lot. So I'm not surprised that he didn't know about the dark mark. And then also you have Ron, who I feel like, yes, he's 14 in this book, but he's still the second youngest. And granted, Ginny is treated like the baby of the family, hands down. I mean, she is just loved and spoiled and is the only, you know, the only girl in the family. But on the flip side, I feel like Mrs. Weasley, Molly, would have shielded him from some of this. Like, why do we need to tell them about the dark mark? Why would we need to tell them about these terrible things that would happen? And you think about things that have happened, you know, with racial injustice or with injustice against people in the LGBTQ+ community. You know, it's just, there are things that we have and continue to witness. And you think about, how will we talk about this to future generations? Will we keep everything in, or will we be telling them about the lessons that were learned? So when I think about the dark mark, you know, it's something that I don't think would have been brought up. It makes me almost think of swastikas, that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily bring up with kids nowadays unless you saw it and unless it was referenced. You'd be more teaching them about what happened and the injustices that happened with those communities, with the Jewish communities, and that still continue sadly to happen nowadays. But I wouldn't necessarily be like, "Okay, kids, and I'm going to show you this symbol and tell you what it means." But if it came up in a book, in a movie, in a discussion like that, I think I would be more apt to talk about it. So I'm saying this because I don't think Molly Weasley would have been like, "And then this is a picture of the dark mark." But instead, she would have told Ron, here was Voldemort. This is what the Death Eaters were like. This is what they were doing. This is how they feel about Muggles. You know, she would have talked about the big picture, but sometimes these things that are more a visual aspect don't necessarily come to mind until it is seen or until it is referenced. So I don't think that it was necessarily Molly shielding Ron from the truth and the atrocities that happened, mm-hmm. but I just think that it being a physical aspect versus the actions that were taken, the way that it made people feel, the way that heroes and champions were able to help fight for these causes would be talked about more instead. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that.
That a girl, way to vamp for me. Good job.
You're welcome.
Good You're job. Welcome. All right, so let's continue on because we are getting at 49 minutes here, 48 minutes-ish. They bring back Winky from being knocked out. And Amos Diggory decides, Vinky.
Amos Diggory, who is a terrible person in this chapter. He is not the sweet, kind man that we see in the movie. He is rough and gruff. Now, maybe he's not. Maybe he's not a morning person.
Right.
Okay, maybe he was woken up in his sleep. He was so excited that Ireland won, and now this is happening.
He's just really hungover. I bet you he's just really hungover.
Okay.
Fair enough. Sorry. So, said Mr. Diggory, his eyes hardening as he turned to look at Winky again, cowering at his feet. You found this wand, eh, elf? And you picked it up and thought you'd have some fun with it, did ya?
But you think back, this is also the same guy who kept putting down Harry. Yeah, remember? You get to be the one that gets to say, oh, I beat Harry Potter.
Like, that's
I don't
different.
Really li- no, that I don't
different.
Think I like Amos Diggory. I like Cedric. I don't think I like Amos.
Well, I, you know, at the time, I said I was kind of out on Amos.
I'm still out.
I think I'm still out.
Yeah.
But the whole thing with Harry is that's just like the father or the parent that thinks their kid can do no wrong and that their kid is just the all-star at everything. And everything that they do.
Saying this to a 14-year-old boy who's an orphan.
It's true. Good
Give
point.
Give me a break.
Good point. Very good point.
Give me a break.
So they have this conversation. They're obviously saying, come on, man. Like, Amos, be careful. What are you doing? And Arthur Weasley has to step in, and everybody has to step in, and they figure this thing out. And
but
then,
many of them go after the kids. So many of them are like, do not lie. Like, Barty Crouch literally says to
Ron
Weasley,
that's Barty Crouch.
Do not lie.
Because Barty Crouch knows, in my opinion, what's happening.
What's going on?
By the way, have we made mention yet that Barty Crouch Jr. has escaped from Azkaban?
Have we mentioned that?
Like, in the book. Is it in terms of the text itself? Okay.
No.
All right. So I will say it was a big fracking deal when Sirius Black escaped.
Yeah, last
Why
book.
Is it not such as big of a deal that Barty Crouch Jr. escapes?
Great question.
That's a... like. And that goes beyond the ministry. That goes beyond Barty Crouch Sr.
And then you know what happens in the next book? It's Order Phoenix. A lot of people bust out.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. That's different. But
I think it's fudge. I think it's fudge just trying to be like, right, we obviously found out that there were some flaws in the Azkaban system.
Sure.
We need to repair this. Let's just start on ground zero and... if we've missed anybody, let's just keep that internal because we still haven't found Sirius Black.
So Barty Crouch Sr., I think he knows what's happened. He knows that his kid escaped and he knows that Winky is here and he can obviously tell something's up with Winky because he's
readers,
saying...
just take a deep breath. Just take a deep breath with me.
Because he's saying, let me take care of Winky myself and starts threatening with her, giving her clothes so that she will shut up so she doesn't have to lose her job. So that she'll stop talking. She just stopped to get her. That's the thing that you got to know. Whenever you know you're in bad stuff and you're dealing with bad people, you're dealing with bad things, and you're a part of it and you're knowingly got to get everybody to stop talking. Don't talk. Just stop. Stop talking and we'll figure it out. And that's what he's trying to do here with Winky. I will give you clothes and that'll make you free. And we already know that this is bad news for Winky because she was the one that was talking about how her job is her life and that's what she does. And that is motivation. I think that has been clearly already established for the reader in the previous chapter.
Yes, we've got them. There's someone here unconscious. But blimey, "You've got someone," shouted Mr. Crouch, sounding highly disbelieving. Who is it?" They heard snapping twigs, the rustling of leaves, and then crunching footsteps as Mr. Diggory reemerged from behind the trees. He was carrying a tiny limp figure in his arms. Harry recognized the tea towel at once. It was Winky. Mr. Crouch did not move or speak as Mr. Diggory deposited his elf on the ground of his feet. The other ministry wizards were all staring at Mr. Crouch. For a few seconds, Crouch remained transfixed, his eyes blazing in his white face as he stared down at Winky. Then he appeared to come to life again. "This cannot be," he said jerkily. "No." He moved quickly around Mr. Diggory and strode off towards the place where he had found Winky. "No point, Mr. Crouch," Mr. Diggory called after him. "There's no one else there." But Mr. Crouch did not seem prepared to take his word for it. They could hear him moving around and the rustling of leaves as he pushed the bushes aside. Pin in it.
Stick a wand in that.
Invisibility.
So, yes, I'm on board with what's happening here. I get it. I guess where I don't care, I just don't care about Hermione's whole, "Oh, she's a house elf and everybody's wronging the house elves." And like, I just don't care.
Well, it's because you're a Slytherin. So when you feel those moments that you don't have empathy in this book, because there is going to be a lot of discussion about the poor treatment of house elves, I just want you to take a deep breath and think about slaves and see how that feels.
Fair enough. Thanks, Mary.
Hermione.
Great job.
So, of course, they're trying to figure out, like, okay, if this was Winky, like, how the heck did Winky, a house elf, do the dark mark? She doesn't even have a wand.
Yeah.
She doesn't even have a wand. And
then later on, I like this conversation. "What's going to happen with Winky?" said Hermione, the moment that they had left the clearing. "I don't know," said Mr. Weasley. "The way that they were treating her," said Hermione furiously. "Mr. Diggory calling her an elf all the time. And Mr. Crouch, he knows she didn't do it, and he's still going to sack her. He didn't care how frightened she'd been or how upset she was. It was like she wasn't even human." "Well, she's not," said Ron. <Yeah. laughs> Hermione rounded on him. "That doesn't mean she doesn't got feelings, wrong. It's disgusting the way..." "Hermione, I agree with you," said Mr. Weasley, quickly beckoning her on. "But now is not the time to discuss elf rights. I want to get back to the tent as fast as we can. What happened to the others?" Thank you, Arthur Weasley. Thank you. Thank you.
Bam! Just like that.
Here's the thing.
Thank you.
Arthur Weasley.
Arthur just made my point. Put that... It's one slash mark for Blake, zero for the book.
Okay.
I'm just saying, this isn't the time, this chapter.
Well, Arthur,
this is not the time to talk about elf rights.
Arthur's being the dad right now, and he's like, "Where are my other kids?" And he also understands the severity of the dark mark. Does the dark mark mean that someone is dead? Where are my other children? What's going on? And as the trio go back to the tent, and Arthur's there, we see Bill and Charlie, and really appreciate the severity of what this means. It is still so raw for them. You know, I think about... those of us who've lived through 9/11, and you know, we've of course now lived through all these different heightened securities and everything that's had to happen. Whereas like the newer generation, they've grown up with it, but they don't remember watching that on TV, being there, having to go through all of it. And so, you know, when we hear, if we were to ever hear a plane be hijacked, those of us who've lived through it, who are a bit older, we will have a severe kind of like whiplash, like a little bit of PTSD, fearful of it. And I think that that's what Arthur and Bill and Charlie and possibly even Percy are feeling. You know, they're like, "You don't get it. When the dark mark was shown, you didn't know if your family was gone."
Let's read this because I really like this. This,
yes.
This absolutely evokes the same kind of feeling that I know you and I have for 9/11.
Yeah.
And in a different way for kids that are... that grew up, that let's say were born in 2002, right? They just don't get it the way that we do.
They didn't live through it.
And the same way, like, we don't understand the imagery from Pearl Harbor, the shooting of
JFK.
Yeah, like, we know the severity of it.
Yes.
We get it, and it's obvious, but we lived through 9/11. Yes. And I really love how this is written. Again, once again, the author does a fantastic job here. And I love Ron. Look, can someone just explain what that skull thing was? It just for all of us readers here who just need one bit more of a clarification,
this
please.
This is the moment when I think I'm like Ron.
That's
Wouldn't
true.
I do that?
Yeah. Hey, you know, can someone fix? What is happening
what
here?
What just happened? What is going on?
It wasn't hurting anyone. Why is it such a big deal? I told you, it's you-know-who's symbol, Ron, said Hermione before anyone else could answer. I read about it in The Rise and Fall of the Dark Arts. And it hasn't been seen for 13 years, said Mr. Weasley quietly. Of course people panicked. It was almost like seeing you-know-who back again. I don't get it, said Ron, frowning. I mean, it's only a shape in the sky. Ron, you know who and his followers sent the Dark Mark into the air whenever they killed, said Mr. Weasley. The terror it inspired. You have no idea. You're too young. Just picture coming home and finding the Dark Mark hovering over your house and knowing what you're about to find inside. Mr. Weasley winced. Everyone's worst fear. The very worst. There was a silence for a moment. Then Bill, removing the sheet from his arm to check on his cut, said, Well, it didn't help us tonight. Whoever conjured it scared the Death Eaters away at the moment they saw it. They all disapparated before we got near enough to unmask any of them. We caught the Robertses before they hit the ground, though. They're having their memories modified right now. And then they explain the whole Death Eaters and the whole thing. And Mary, you are 100% right. The imagery of 9/11 for us and seeing the buildings come down and the ash and the first responders and the flag going up after all the commotion was over and bodies and people getting taken out, that is PTSD inducing. Like that is for someone who lived through it. I understand why Ron doesn't get the severity of it.
I mean, it even scares the Death Eaters. That's one of the things that is so remarkable about this, because it's not quite clear, like, were the Death Eaters, did they already plan this? Did they know, like, okay, the night of the Quidditch World Cup, let's just get rowdy, let's mess with some muggles, or was it because they were a bit intoxicated, thank you, fire whiskey? Like, it's not particularly clear. What we do get a sense of is that this Barty Crouch plan was laid out. We got it in chapter one, talking with Voldemort, understanding the timeline of the Quidditch World Cup. So the Death Eaters are here, playing with the Roberts family, doing unspeakable things, and yet when they see the Dark Mark, they flee.
Yeah, I like this. But if they were the Death Eaters, why did they disapparate when they saw the Dark Mark, said Ron? They'd have been pleased to see it, wouldn't they? And again, this, for all you readers who aren't getting this quite yet, like Ron is the everyman in this. Like,
thank you, Ron.
Ron is the one that's standing in for you saying, what is the deal
here? But because
here?
He's a wizard, it isn't making it seem like, okay, fill in the plot points.
No,
like,
he's
it's
learning
just,
along with
yes,
you. Yes, yes, absolutely. Use your brains, Ron, said Bill. If they really were Death Eaters, they worked really hard to keep out of Azkaban when you-know-who lost power and told all sorts of lies about him forcing them to kill and torture people. I'd bet they'd be even more frightened than the rest of us to see him come back. They denied they'd ever been involved with him when he lost his powers and went back to their daily lives. I don't reckon he'd ever be so pleased with them. Do you? Like, awesome.
Yes.
Thank you,
yes.
Super Hot Bill. Thank you, Super Hot Bill. Because this is excellent stuff. This is really, and this gives you.
Well, I mean, it's like Super Hot Charlie, and Bill's like pretty fine too.
Oh, sorry. Right? So the level of
hot?
The level of hotness.
I feel like they're
here,
both hot.
Charlie is hot in a Han Solo kind of way.
Nice.
I think Bill is hot in like a. Oh, I don't know how I want to categorize this.
They're both hot. It's a win-win. I mean, Bill, Charlie, whatever. What's that movie that I always reference? The one where like she ends up having to marry kind of like both brothers accidentally. One of them is the guy that, whatever, something river or something.
Not a river runs through it.
No.
It's Legends of the Fall.
Legends of the Fall. Like, really? You can't lose.
You get Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You know.
Or some other hot guy.
Or Aidan Quinn.
Yeah.
You know, like.
You just, oh, well.
And then there was the third brother, the Peggy of the group.
Yes.
Where you're
and
like.
Peggy. Bless his heart. So important things to note, of course, in this chapter is that we do have this ruckus with the Death Eaters. We are acquainted now with what the Death Eaters mean, what they stand for, the Dark Mark. We get to understand the history. The entire wizarding world is now seeing this. You know, like, this isn't just Harry Potter having a dream. This isn't just Harry Potter kind of having a little run in with Voldemort's on the back of somebody's head in the basement of Hogwarts. This is the Quidditch World Cup. This is the world scene. We do get a lot of red herrings deposited in this chapter.
Sure.
We get the mention of Madame Maxime, who we're going to be meeting, of course, in future chapters, as a possible suspect to create the chaos in the Quidditch World Cup. We've got Ludo Bagman acting really, really shady
just
in this
out of
chapter.
Yeah.
Like, just like hanging out in the woods where kind of this spell is kind of cast from and weird things are happening.
Right.
So we don't really know what's going on with Ludo Bagman. We've got, you know, Draco acting quite funny.
Stan Shunpike's involved.
I mean, poor Stan, right?
I
just
know.
Like, bless his heart. Bless his heart. Let's get him a good skincare regime and like, a book.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of different people here. Madame Maxime, obviously. There's a lot of different people here that could be involved with the casting of the Dark Mark. What that means, how that affects the group, and
Barty Crouch is just like
he's on
different
fire,
in like, this book than in the movie. I think in the movie he comes off a little bit like dweeby, and oh, you know, like yes, he's tall, and yes, he has a big important job, but I feel like in the book. We see him much more as like, I'm going to use my weight and like push things around. And I don't mess around. Like, I've got perfect shoes. I've got a perfect outfit. Like, I'm going to dot my I's, cross my T's. Do not mess with me.
All right. You got anything else to say about this chapter?
I think it's hysterical that Amos Diggory thought that Harry Potter would conjure the Dark Mark.
I know.
Amos Diggory, not the brightest bulb in the bunch.
Certainly not Cedric Diggory, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
Amos does not live up to Cedric. All right, so anything else you want to talk about this
chapter?
That is
it, my love.
All right, let's get into the different perspective.
Okay.
Do you got one?
I will pull one out of my mind, like I always do.
All right, here we go. Let's do this.
It's like the bingo ball machine. Okay, let's see who I get.
Okay.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Arthur Weasley.
Arthur! What's going on? Not a great day today, Arthur. Huh?
Listen, I packed my good luck plugs.
Oh, I'm like the British Prime Minister. Excuse me. Sorry. I packed my good luck plugs. Totally awesome. Ireland won. Really, really happy.
Yep.
I am never going camping again with all my kids.
I don't blame you. That's
never.
You know what? It's never a vacation with kids. It's an adventure.
Molly warned me. She was like, are you sure you want to take all of them? Not just like the old ones who can watch out for themselves or just Ginny because she's easy. And he was like, no, I've got this, Molly. You go shopping. You have fun in Diagon Alley. You go and you get yourself an ice cream at 40Qs every single day.
Yep.
I don't even care. I've got this. And you know that he was like pumping himself up. And he probably had. I had a talk with Bill and Charlie.
Yeah.
And I was like, Molly doesn't think I can do this. Guys, you're adults. I need you to hook me up.
And they were like yeah, Dad, don't worry.
We've got this.
Yeah,
okay?
I got you. Yep.
So I think I've got this.
Uh-huh. You should be able to.
My middle kids, who I can't tell apart, gambling, okay?
Didn't even get paid, by the way. Didn't even get their winnings.
Well, we don't know that yet, okay? Be quiet. That's hush-hush.
Right.
So
just make sure they don't tell their mother.
Okay, don't tell Mom. So I've got gambling kids.
Gambling.
I've got Harry Potter, which like... Listen, I signed up for all the kids. You throw Harry Potter in there. This is kind of a problem.
He's the chosen one.
I mean, he's had some issues every year. You never know when it's going to strike. Well, it struck, okay? So then I think I have the best idea ever.
Uh-huh. What do you got?
Well, chaos struck. And what does a Gryffindor do? You jump up and you go solve that problem and you go be a hero.
You know what? You're.
I need a hero. I'm here. And... I just need to find a way not to tell Molly that I said goodbye to the little kids. I need to find a way to tell Molly that they were almost stunned by all of the ministry officials, including trigger-happy Amos Diggory. I need to find a way to tell Molly that I totally lost Ginny for about 30 minutes. Her favorite. I didn't have the foresight to ask Bill or Charlie. I mean, heck, Charlie wrangles dragons. I should have just said, like, Charlie, go with the kids. I didn't think that through. So what I'm hoping is I can, like, just have a deal with the kids where I buy them all some Bernie Barks flavored beans. And I say, let me tell your mom what happened.
Yeah, just stay quiet.
Because she's probably getting the daily profit right now. And just do me a solid, Harry, Ron, Hermione.
Do you obliviate them? That's the question. Are you going to go that? Because this is a big deal. Molly's coming after you.
I'm debating it. Like, just obliterate all of them.
Yep, obliviate.
Whatever.
Not obliterate. Big difference.
Listen,
whoa,
man.
Oh, what so the power of one letter.
I didn't get a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
I lost half of the kids.
You're talking about obliterating your kids.
I lost they almost were by Amos.
You had to step in. Yeah, just be like, stop.
This guy's supposed to be my friend. And he's like, Harry Potter. Are you kidding me? You think Harry Potter made the dark mark? Oh, my God. I got to get a new job.
You know, it could be worse. Winky could have done it.
I need a vacation.
Oh, you need, and no kids. No kids. Are you going to bring Molly with you?
Yep.
Is she going to want to come with you? That's the big question.
So.
I think it'd be a vacation on your couch.
I need a diary to like write this all down because that was a day. That was a day.
Oh,
I wonder,
man,
if I get a raise or a bonus.
Yeah, no.
Probably not. Yeah.
All right.
That's my life.
End scene. Good job. Very good job.
There are a lot of people in that scene and like I just didn't want to get into them.
I don't blame you because you know that's a heavy chapter. You gotta find some fun and levity in that kind of thing. And
it's Arthur.
It's Arthur. Arthur's the man for that thing. All right, we do have one email that I want to get
Bring
to.
It
it's actually kind of a special email that
Ooh.
I think is actually kind of cute. So let's get to that one right now. By the way, if you are a listener, don't cover up Betty.
Okay,
Betty's there. There is a if you want to send some questions in while we're doing this premiere thing, because we're not having live interactions with
we are still having live interactions. It's just
But like during the podcast.
If you want to submit your feedback, is what Blake's saying.
Yes. Go to maryandblakemedia@gmail.com where you can send us your feedback or any questions or whatever. And we will read them here on the podcast. We'll talk about them. And we got one. So let's get to it right now.
Oh, Miles Head.
This one comes from Coulson.
Hello, Coulson.
Coulson, this is a very special email. He says, Dear Mary and Blake, I am extremely inspired by you.
Hi, Coulson. Yay.
So I decided to create a podcast of my own. I'm going to post my first episode of Hire a House Elf podcast on June 29th.
Amazing.
And that this obviously must have been written prior to. But if you guys can read this on your podcast, great. If not, I understand. It's my first time doing it. And I am 13 years old. Thanks so much. I love you guys and what you do.
Azkaban age. I feel like that's how I'm going to refer to people in their teenage years.
Azkaban age.
Yeah. Mary, Chamber, Azkaban.
I wanted to read this because, Coulson, if you are listening, good luck.
Hi.
And I am so proud of you and thank you for saying that you are inspired by Mary and I. That is very special. It shows you the power of the all-encompassing nerd clan. What you guys and gals do for the community. Mary, as someone who is a podcaster and someone who loves Harry Potter and is excited about the idea of podcasting and the growing community of all of this, what are the words, the wise, sage words of advice that you have for young Coulson, who is 13 years of age, who wants to start his first podcast?
Have fun. Just always find the fun. Obviously, Potter is in your life because it brings you a source of Lumos, and you're going to find people who connect with you in that way. And congratulations. It's never easy to start. You got to figure out a lot of things. And we are just so thankful to have more Potter podcasters out in the world.
Yes, absolutely. So everybody in the Nerd Clan, please go give Coulson some support and give his podcast listen. Hire a House Elf. I don't know if it's up on iTunes yet or if it's, I'm sorry, Apple Podcasts, or if it's, it shows you how old I am and that I'm still referring to the podcast site as iTunes.
It's all good.
And I don't know if he has a website or anything, but go please check it out if you can find it. Hire a House Elf. Help support one of the fellow Nerd Clan members. So that is it for our emails. I wanted to highlight that one from Coulson. Good luck, kiddo. Anything else you want to say about this, or you want to close this bad boy out?
We can close it out.
All right, let's do it, shall we?
Mm-hmm. Everybody, thank you you so much for taking the time to listen and for being such an amazing community. We did have a review on Apple Podcasts asking why we've had to slow down our schedule a little bit.
Yes.
And I just wanted to be transparent with you all as part of our community. Blake has been ill for the better part of a month. And I also, we've also gone through another miscarriage. So we haven't been like super forthcoming with all of this on social media. We've been a bit vague, but seeing as how you're here at the end of a podcast, I feel like I wanted to let you know, since you've gotten through this, to continue to know that we're here and this does bring Lumos in our Knox. And we appreciate you and we appreciate your patience, as it does take a lot out of us when we have these physical and emotional struggles go on in our lives.
Yeah, at least for me, we're able to record when I'm capable of recording, and I will be forthcoming about what's going on later on, probably, you know, a little when I have a little bit more distance from this. So thank you for your patience and just enjoying the ride with me as we come along here. Our recording times are very limited, but thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, so on that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.